So good morning, and Alan, thank you for the opportunity to come and talk here. So my name is Masood Nazir. I'm a managing partner of a practice in Birmingham. I still do that Friday and Saturday. We look after 26,000 patients. It helps me. I think this whole thing about care closer to home, it's nice to do these national roles. But until you're sitting in a practice looking after patients, you actually don't tend to know what the challenges are. And actually, it's really helped me. So over the years, initially having gone into medicine just to look after patients, there's a bit about actually why you get involved in trying to do bigger things. But actually, when you're sitting in there day in, day out, looking after patients, working with colleagues, and you hear about the frustrations of when the system doesn't work, there's an appetite to go, how can I fix this? And that's probably what's got me involved in some of the work I'm doing at the moment. People are thinking, what's NHSX? Because that's the other thing that people at the moment. People are aware of NHS England. They're aware of NHS Digital. There's NHS Improvement. The Department of Health, there's all these different organisations that commission services. And actually, all of them have a say in actually the different systems that are involved. Okay? And that sometimes really complicates things. Both the policy can be different. And actually, when you ask people and suppliers to make a difference, make products better, they're all turning out, who do I listen to? And actually, it can be who's paying the most, who's shouting the loudest, who's most important. And actually, sometimes you forget in all of that that actually there's some really important things. There are people out there looking after patients. There are patients. And actually, you need to line that all up. Okay. So one of the key missions of NHSX, bringing all these different bodies together, is actually, let's not forget there are people out there trying to look after patients. And they need systems that work. Let's make those systems work. And let's not forget the patients that they look after. Okay. These technologies that work, how can we make them available to more patients? Okay. But also, listen to their frustrations. You know, I still sit in the practice on days, and I'd love not to be have a patient in front of me where patient saying, I was in hospital last week, have you had the letter yet? And it isn't there. In this day and age, you'd think it would be there. Or for them to go to the hospital and find out their letter isn't at the hospital. These are really basic things. Why is that still happening at this stage in time? We should have fixed that by now. Why in certain parts of the country does it work, in other parts it doesn't work? Actually, we can make this work. Okay? But the technologies we get, actually, why can't we make sure that they're available everywhere? Okay? And not just in certain places, depending on where you are. And that means making sure that funding and everything else, when it's made available, there are certain things we must do. Okay? Standards. Okay? Because people spend lots and lots of money trying to find the right products, and actually then they find that actually the product works in their setting, and whenever they have to talk to somebody else, it doesn't talk. That's because people are using different standards, different products, or the products are procured, you know, have never been procured on that basis. We can fix some of that. Okay? But equally, some of the innovations. Why keep reinventing these things? And there's some really good examples out there where people are making things work. The record, the information works, it flows, patients get really good care. Many, many years ago, when I was at the Strategic Health Authority, I did this thing across the West Midlands, and I did something called the Treasure Map, okay, which is finding all the really good things that happened across the West Midlands. But actually, when you looked at it all, unless you as a patient went to all the different areas, you couldn't get really good care. So the ambulance service in one area was great, but the hospital in another area was great. But none of them had actually the same system. So as a patient, unless you hopped around the whole of the West Midlands, the experience was broken up. It wasn't great. And actually, we still have that across the NHS. But also, we don't tend to empower people locally. Okay? And actually, and listening to the front line about actually some of their frustrations, and actually the really basic things. If I haven't got computers, if I haven't got connections, internet connections at work, how can I deliver care? You want me to use these things, but I need to look after patients, actually. There's some really basic things you need to get right. So nationally, so locally, I have the privilege in my practice of looking after 12 partners, lots of other doctors and nurses, 26,000 patients. But actually, there's an opportunity here to do more. So nationally, in my role, I get the opportunity to make sure that both the hardware, the software, the tools, everything else is available for all these practices. Okay? And actually, there's an opportunity for almost 60 million patients in the country, to make sure that actually the clinicians looking after them, the practices looking after them, have the right hardware, the right software to get it right. And that's really important. It's a big responsibility. But actually, at some stage, you've got to take it on and say, actually, this is really important. It's some really nice, shiny things that these people need. But actually, all these practices, all these CCGs, are all doing slightly different things. Actually, here's an opportunity, nationally, to say, actually, how can I help make sure that the staff in these practices can really look after their patients? They've got the right tools to make it happen. Alan alluded to some of this, and actually there's lots and lots of surveys out there. And actually, no matter, over the years, you'll have heard lots of presentations about what impacts on people being able to look after patients. Okay, what are the pressures in practices? Really basic things. What are the pressures in hospitals? Okay, simple things about the poor speed of the internet connection. We now have a national program looking at this, but even then it varies to what people are investing in. But actually nationally, we now know that we will make sure that every single practice, every single hospital has the best internet connection possible. So actually imagine sitting there. Imagine you're sitting at home now. And I still remember the days of dial-in when you had to dial-in things and you heard that beeping noise. We should accept that. But actually when at home you can get really fast broadband connections, why can't you have them at work to do your work? You know, it's frustrating. But actually sitting watching that egg timer when you've got 10 minutes with the patient and it doesn't work. In this day and age, it shouldn't happen. Okay? But actually the logins, the different systems you have to log in to get the right information. In this day and age, there are solutions to be able to fix this. Why is that happening? We hear about video consultations and you'll hear more about this. But actually my biggest pushback from colleagues out there is, you expect us to use video consultations, but as soon as I use that product on my computer, my internet connection, it will fall over. Okay, so if you want me to do these things, I need proper technology. Okay. I, for many years, have known the challenges of 10-minute consultations, trying to fit a day's worth of work in. You know, it is challenging. I, like most colleagues, will go into work fairly early, finish late, but even then, the work isn't finished. And actually not being able to work from home easily, or not being able to work from a care home or a nursing home, or from other locations is challenging. But in this day and age, most people do that as part of their normal jobs in any other industry. But we have not made it easy in the NHS. Why can't we make it easy? Okay. So mobile working. And actually, that's partly because sometimes it's the hardware and the things. Sometimes the software we procure, we've never said that's really important for us. So there are really important things. And I think you've heard the word, and I've pretty been saying the word interoperable for a long time. Okay? And I've committed to actually making sure that funding isn't given to systems where they don't have that. Systems who want, you know, people out there, suppliers who want to build systems which are closed, don't want to share, we shouldn't be funding centrally. Okay? Doesn't make sense at all. Closed systems don't make sense. We only know we've got to share information. Okay? So why would you invest in a system that's very locked down, that you have to pay more to open up, that can't share with anybody else at all? But other things we must do, and I think this is the other thing that we sometimes forget, I think this is about technology. We think technology is fairly simple. Okay? And actually, some cases, the technology we use, we do buy smartphones, which you open a box, there's no instructions inside them, and we know how to use them. It'd be nice if the NHS technology was just as easy, but it isn't. Okay? And it requires training. And we sometimes forget that actually we give practices and people technology, but we don't spend any time investing in actually showing them how to use it. So they have systems, but nobody's been in to show them how to use it to its best effect. Okay, causes challenges. But the amount of administration generated, okay, with some of these things. I know we talk about AI and artificial intelligence in this space, but actually most clinicians, most practices would be happy with augmented intelligence. This is just technology that would help them with their day-to-day work. The number of normal blood test results, normal letters I get back each day that I don't need to see, but I still have to look at and file because actually the technology can't do it, or actually the way things are done. Actually, some places, you know, we're having to put in admin staff to do that to help free up the clinicians' time to see patients. But actually, those admin staff could be spending time with patients. We don't look at that, but that's where technology could help. And in other industries, that's what they do. So we are looking for solutions that actually make life easier. Just out of a quick question, how many people here have an app for booking an appointment with their GP? Okay, ordering a prescription? Access to their records? So many years ago, if I'd asked that question in this room, even 4 years ago, there would have been a handful of people who've done the appointment booking, and even then, they would have said, it's awful. I rarely can get an appointment. Okay, but actually, access to records wouldn't have happened. And one of the things I learned, and I ran the patient online program for a long time, and we're up to almost about 16 million patients now who have an app to be able to do that. And all surgeries have to offer it. But one of the things I learned very early on was if the app and the technology wasn't fit for purpose, neither the practices would offer it or the patients would use it. There's something really important. Before you go up and start promoting it to patients, you've got to look at the technology and make sure it does work. The practices have got to know how to use it as well. And sometimes I think the challenge is that patients turn up with technology that's probably better than what the surgeries have in their practice. That's not good for anybody. So just to highlight some of the things that I have responsibility for, which hopefully will help. So there's something called the GPIT operating model. So you spend a lot of money centrally in the hardware that's needed for practices. So every year we make sure that actually the practice can have the right computers, versions of Windows, the latest hardware they need to make things work. But it varies across the country to how that's invested in by CCGs. So this year, along with the BMA, we've been very clear that actually our investment needs to make sure that we do not have surgeries any longer who have really old computers that don't work, where the login time takes a long time. Okay, so a lot of the money that's been taken out before hasn't been used for that. And I think this year we're going to make sure that those excuses, the valid excuses, aren't there any longer, which say, I've got hardware that doesn't work, therefore I can't do videos, I can't offer online consultations, I can't do the things you asked me to do. Software is the other thing. So we have, all of us have clinical systems, and in general practice, in primary care, you've had computer systems for about 20 years. And I know that I probably haven't written in a set of notes for about at least 17 years. That's really good for me. People like me who've got really bad handwriting, it's a really good thing. My partners couldn't read it. I couldn't read it after a while. It's not a good thing, okay? But software has been a godsend because it really helps, okay? But that means over the years, I rely more and more on that software, okay? I really, you know, most of my decisions are based on that. Everything is in there. You know, it prompts me to do things. But the challenge has been that we've evolved. The general practice, primary care, has kept changing. But the software hasn't necessarily done that. There's some really good things. And I think a lot of practices now in the country would not want to give up the clinical software they had. They wouldn't say, take away my computer system, it's awful. What they would say is actually it's not kept up. You know, it's frustrating, it keeps freezing, it keeps falling over. I can't use it when I go outside the practice. Lots of things that it can't do. It won't talk to the hospital system. Okay, hospital system won't talk to it. All these things don't work. Okay, so one of my responsibilities at the end of this year is that the contract we have with the clinical system suppliers finishes. And we're putting a new contract into place with all of them. What we're not doing is just saying we'll have more of the same. Okay? And we won't have more of the same systems. We need better systems. Systems that are fit for now and fit for the future. So very clear. Also, if your system doesn't work, isn't up to date, doesn't do all these things, we don't want it. Okay? And that's really important. But also other systems that want to connect to it. And around this room today, you'll see all different suppliers who've got different products. And one of their frustrations is, whenever I talk to a GP primary care system, and there's four at the moment in the country, might be more next year, well, actually, it's difficult. I can't connect. It's clunky. Or it takes far too long for me to... And so, therefore, I have to send a message in, which is either via an email or a letter to get the message into that system. Makes no sense. Why can't I have a system that allows me to work with it? Okay? We'll be able to do that from next year. Really important. A hospital letter coming back to me, I shouldn't have to read the letter and code it, write the information back in. Why can't the information come back straight into my system? I look at it and file it, okay? It's really important, vice versa. We've also changed, and this is just to allow us on the program, from being in my own practice, working in my consulting room, looking after one patient, I now work as a practice as a whole. So in my own practice, we have pharmacists, paramedics. It's great, okay? But also now we're no longer just working in our own practice, we work in a locality. And so my primary care network, we're working with two other practices, okay? And actually what I need to be able to do now is be able to work closely with them. Many years ago, that never happened, that collaboration. But that means being able to share information. Because if I want to look after their patients or look, you know, work together, or I want to work with a pharmacist nearby, okay? Or the pharmacies nearby, I need information to flow, okay? And actually that's not been easy because the technology for this, there was never a requirement. So GP Connect is one of the other programs looking at nationally. What does it mean? It's some really basic things. And again, you know, lots of slides, lots of information. This will be shared and you'll see the flows. But there's some really basic things that you must have on there. A lot of systems want to be able to book an appointment into a GP's system. Patients want to. But equally, let's say that the NHS 111 service, or you've been to a pharmacy and they've seen a patient and they've assessed them. Well, at the moment, the only way to get a GP appointment is to say, well, go and ring your GP. But if they've seen them, why can't they be able to book an appointment back into your GP system? Very easily. Okay? This technology allows that to happen. But equally, before they book an appointment, I think there's something really important. If another clinician somewhere else is looking at your patient, they need to see their medical record. And if you were a patient in front of them, and they could see that you were diabetic, asthmatic, what medications you were on, what tests you had done, that would give a level of confidence. And at the moment, we block systems for looking at reviewing records. This allows a view of the GP record. Okay, so you can actually see the information you need to make a decision. Then, therefore, if you want them to have an appointment, it makes it easier. And the last thing is, at the moment, we're still sending information back in letters. Imagine being able to just write back into the GP record a note, and that makes life a lot easier. People may or may not be aware, if you have a flu jab at a pharmacy at the moment, the pharmacy sends an email to the GP practice, somebody in the admin team looks at that email and adds a code into the system. Much easier. And that happens with lots of things. But actually being able to write back into the GP record in a proper code, we'll have a standard for that across the country and make it a lot easier. No matter where you go, be able to write back into that GP system. I won't go through this because it's a slide, but it'll be in the pack that's shared. But it just shows the flow of where it will make a difference. There are lots of practices across the country with lots of rooms full of notes. My own practice, think about it, 26,000 notes in a room. I've been lucky enough to find some space in nooks and crannies and empty that room out. Actually, it's a big room. And actually, we've got almost like a call centre in there. And now I get one of the doctors to sit in that room as well to help with triage and other things. But that space was wasted for so long. But actually, it's a challenge. But imagine, and those notes, on a regular basis, I haven't called upon one of those for a long time. Every so often for insurance reports, legal reports, we need them. But very rarely, because everything else is normally in the record. And even that, I think sometimes information isn't necessarily needed. But imagine taking those pieces of paper away, because those pieces of paper seem to travel around the country with patients. The amount of work, when a patient leaves you, patient joins you, all this paper gets flowing. So we've kicked off a national project, managed to convince people in the end that actually it's a good idea. Why don't we take all these notes away? Okay. Digitalize them only when we need them, but actually stop moving the paper around the system. When the patient moves around, we just move the signal to wherever the notes are. So we've got a piece of work doing that, and the hope is actually by 2023, we'll have taken all the paper notes out of all the GP practices, giving you that space back, which you can use for other things. This is just a reminder for me that actually 17 years ago when I started, that my senior partners used to do about 17 visits at lunchtime. They used to do a morning surgery, about 15 or 16 home visits, afternoon surgery, I'd still be home for tea. I don't think I could do that now. No. But the number of visits they did, and actually they were very different. The social visits, the type of consultations, very different. And actually we're in a very different world. I put the picture of the fax machine just as a reminder that actually one of my other missions this year is to help practices get rid of the fax machines. Somebody's made a statement about that, so we're going to have to do that. But there's a way. But it's amazing how reliant we are, because care homes, people around us still use that means of getting our attention and sending us something important. We've got to get rid of the fax machine. The leading tower of Pisa on there is just to demonstrate the poor infrastructure. Okay? Because you want to build all these lovely technologies, but if the foundations aren't strong in practice, we're not going to get there. So I have a bit of work to do on that. And this slide here, this picture, is probably just a reminder to show you about technology and about the cultural change that needs to happen. So that's one of the waiting areas in my practice. And on that wall was a wooden box for years. One of the senior partners, his father made us a wooden box. That wooden box was for prescriptions. And actually what patients did, especially on a Monday, we'd have about 500 or 600 prescriptions come into the practice. Okay. People come in, drop in that box, we'd empty the box in the evening, and then the reception staff would take it and process it through the system. And then we work closely with the doctors who would issue it. Okay. So I got the patients together, and I got the staff who like doing prescriptions together, and the other colleague said, let's work on the principle that I'd like to remove that box, because you now have an alternative. You could sit at home, download this app, and order the prescription. Okay. So we'll give you the login. Instead of coming, let's give you the login details to do it from home. Because we now have the technology, it works. And actually, when you order it that way around, it goes straight into the doctor's inbox, and actually we can process it. But I had to convince everybody. So the patient said, yes, sounds like a good idea. And the staff said, well, I'm not going to lose my job, am I? No, there's enough work for you to do. So we had to convince them. But we took the box away 2 years ago. I think I've had 3 patient complaints in that time. And we still allow people, and you know, I was at my PPG meeting yesterday, And I have somebody saying, well, I'm 90, I don't want to use the technology. You don't have to, okay? You still have to be, but actually the majority of our patients are very comfortable, okay? You know, almost about 40% of our patients now use the online services, and actually it's grown. But we had to do something just to say, take that easy option away, I'll drop it in there. It's made life easier for our staff, it's made life easier for the patients. But there's a bit of a cultural change, and sometimes you have to bring people together to make that happen. And this is to remind me that actually we do need to invest in the workforce. We can't just expect technology to be put in and it'll work. And there's quite a lot of reviews which talk about actually the need for it. Actually, over time, I think we've spent a lot of time talking about digital and technology. Alan and I spoke about that. I think, George, we spoke about it briefly. But what we don't do is invest time. Because actually, there's nothing at medical school, when I started at medical school, said, learn that you'll have to use technology. Okay. But there is something about when you do put technology, keep it simple. Expect not everybody will want to use it straight away. I think Philip said that. Make it really simple. Most patients, if I gave them an app or something else now, there's a bit of time. So in my own practice, we have a group that comes in regularly that sits with patients and shows them how to use the different things. That helps. Okay. Some people will use it much quicker. Primary care networks. Just in case people are involved. So I'm involved in looking at the digital support for primary care networks. One of them is the whole idea of data sharing, but I think it's fairly straightforward. Once you accept the fact that actually you need to tell your patients what you're doing. It's a very simple principle. We will be doing a national data sharing agreement. The final bits are being agreed. It always takes a bit longer when there's legal teams involved, but it'll be there. But the principles are very simple. Tell your patients what you're doing. I've always been taught this. You know, if your patients know what data you're sharing, who you're sharing with, and the purpose, actually things are very straightforward. It's when they don't know and they have a surprise, that's when you get into trouble. That's when the Information Commissioner gets involved. Okay, so keep it really simple. Always tell your patients. Take every opportunity you get, the newsletters, screens in your room, in your waiting areas, your website. Make sure all of these are populated with the right information. But also, we're going to teach practices. And I know lots of people have got WhatsApp groups, other things. As long as you're not sharing patient identifiable information, but actually other things to collaborate. People are starting to do that. Actually, they're very straightforward things. But there might be other products we can invest in for practices. So we're starting to look at that, actually see what we can use. One minute warning. My challenge is I speak really fast when I get passionate about things, and I'm having to slow down, which I never time well. The last really important part of my role is probably getting together all the different professional bodies. Because I many a time get told, we can't do that because our medical defense organization won't approve of that, or the GMC won't approve of that, or the BMA say this. So actually, I've been very lucky and fortunate that I got good working relationships from the Information Commissioner to the GMC, to anybody who actually has a view on these things. And most times, if you get them in the room, you can get to a consensus. So I try and make sure that guidance isn't published on the whole, but we haven't got a consensus. That makes life a lot easier. That's what stops people innovating and doing things, because actually there's an excuse. I can't share data because the BMA said this or my medical defense organization said this. Talk to medical defense organizations, they will tell you that actually most of the litigation they get is due to lack of information sharing, not because of information sharing. But the assumption is that actually things will go wrong. Done the right way, these things are safe. Just to promote, for people who are getting involved in digital leadership roles, I think there's always been a bit of a challenge for where to get the right information from the centre from. So we've set up a forum, and this is just, again, details are in here. This is an opportunity for you to learn about, be it the GP Connect programme, be it the Lloyd George Records programme, to know when things are happening, you know, because actually I think that's the challenge. But also, I'd like to hear about what your challenges are. It's amazing, as I go around, what I hear about is all the sticky plaster solutions out there. Okay, but unless I know about them, and I can help prioritising them, we can't fix them. But there are people doing things out there, which, you know, I can understand why they're doing what they're doing, but actually, unless we hear about it, we can't prioritize what needs to happen next. And that's it. And thank you for the opportunity to speak.